This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Dave Worthams has his hand in politics and public policy in many different ways. He's the policy director for the Michigan Bankers Association, a member of the Kalamazoo County Road Commission, former chairman of the Kalamazoo County Republican Party, and he maintains a blog that is sometimes lighthearted, such as entries about sports and music. Sometimes there are nuanced discussions of policy, and then there are some fairly serious entries, like his recent post on the police officer being found not guilty in the shooting death of Philando Castile in suburban Minneapolis. That entry is titled, "I Can't Do This Anymore." Dave Worthams, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's, before we dive into what you actually wrote, I want to note here, you know, Philando Castile is certainly not an isolated case anymore in America. We've had several shootings involving African-Americans being stopped by police at traffic stops or perhaps on foot. Does this one seem different to you? Does it have a different feel to it that is maybe a little more, I guess, the sort of thing that gets you to write something like this?
Yeah, it really is. It is, I think in this case, you have someone who is a properly licensed concealed weapons holder, followed the law to the T.
By telling the officer,
I have a weapon and I have a permit. And you hear silence from those who want to protect the Second Amendment, the NRA, and some of the folks both in the Democratic and Republican parties, and you hear silence. But then when you get to the NRA annual convention, oh, they're never going to take away from guns, and the reason we do this is so that the police will not be able to injure us when we're following a law. For there to be silence really says a lot to me and makes me wonder, when are people going to listen? When are people going to understand what's going on in the African-American community, regardless of party? When are people going to realize that in the police community, which I have a lot of respect for, I have some friends who are members of the police community, when are they going to realize there's got to be something that's tweaked or changed in the training that will get those bad apples out of the bunch? You know, what the old saying, a few bad apples will spoil the bunch, and that's what's happening here, and it's happening nationwide, and it's happening in the 24/7 news cycle.
So you start off this blog post actually with embedding a video of Trevor Noah on The Daily Show.
Like, it's interesting how the people who define themselves by one fundamental American right, the right to bear arms, show that once race is involved, the only right that they believe in is their right to remain silent.
How did that speak to you?
It was exactly what I was feeling. I mentioned in the blog post, he explained it in ways, in words that better than I could come up with. That, again, here's a man following the law and he loses his life. Why is it when you're following the law, you lose your life? And why is it so skewed in these instances that it seems to be, you know, mostly in the Black American community? And it really breaks my heart that when others who are looking at this have shared the same experiences, and we share our experiences, tend to get ignored by folks who say that they're our friends, by folks that say are our colleagues. And it makes you wonder, okay, at the end of the day, are you really my friend when you are completely discounting what I have lived?
So Trevor Noah brought up that point that you did about the NRA being completely silent on someone who legally owned a firearm and told the police officer that he had the firearm. They have not said anything on this case. And it made me wonder a little bit if the NRA's political clout is somewhat related to the idea of identity politics, that when we think of gun rights, we don't think of Philando Castile. We think of maybe somebody who lives out in the country and is probably white.
Yeah. I mean, probably just the general membership of the NRA. Yes, there are some African Americans. I forget what the percentage is, but it is mostly Caucasian. And so when you're dealing with, I guess, member management, do you go out there and defend the policy or do you defend what the members think they want to say? Or is it your job as a leader in the NRA to say, look, there is a violation of the Second Amendment here and we all need to stand together? Because if it happens to one, it very well could happen to us all. But again, like you said, identity politics, will that fly on Capitol Hill? Will that fly in the courts? And I think that's the real question here. And I have to give Rand Paul some props. I remember I was at the Republican conference up on the island. This is probably 8 years ago at this point. 8 or 9 years ago, and Rand was one of the keynote speakers, and he actually spent 45 minutes in the main dining room at the Grand Hotel talking about the inequalities in the judicial system. And at that point, I was not a Rand Paul fan. You know, you say Rand Paul, I would go, blah, blah. But that night, I came away with a lot of respect for him and actually was going to vote for him for president if he had stayed in the race long enough. Because he was saying, it's not necessarily black and white. It is black, but you do have a racial kind
element.
Element in there. Because if you are white, chances are you have the assets and the ability to pay for a high-powered lawyer, someone who can really work the system. But if you are African-American, you don't necessarily have those assets. And so chances are you're going to get the heavier sentence. You're going to get the guilty verdict. You're going to really be punished by the criminal justice system.
So you noted that your own experiences here tend to get discounted by people. What are your own experiences when it comes to the police?
You know, I can remember in time back in high school, back when Putt-Putt was still up on Westridge Avenue, and a fight had broken out there, but we weren't anything about a part of it. Matter of fact, when the fight broke out, we quickly left and was standing by our car getting ready to leave, and the police came in and saw that the incident was inside, took care of that. When they came back outside, they then followed us down to almost Millam, pulled us over. Had us get out of the car and then search the car. Okay, well, why are you searching the car? Don't ask questions, just stand over there. Then they would open the trunk, pull out the tire iron. What is this? What do you have this for? Sir, that's a tire iron. It's used to change flat tires. Don't get smart with me. Okay, whatever.
Just telling you what a tire iron is used for and why it's there?
But at this point, you know, I'm just going to be quiet, do what you need to do. Number of years later, I'm a freshman at Western. I'm driving on campus. I was driving my mother's car. My mother had a Mazda RX-7 at the time. And so I'm driving it around campus. Went towards the bookstore to grab something. Then I was going back to Bigelow Hall, may she rest in peace, to drop those books off at my dorm. And I get pulled over. Light shines bright, right in the eyes. What's going on, sir? No announcement that I needed to stop or anything like that. Suddenly the guy gets out. Put your hands in the car. What? Why? Put your hands in the car. Whose car is this? It's my mother's car. Can you prove it? Go ahead and run the plates. Are you fine? It belongs to Ernesta Worthams. And I'm her son, David Worthams. I can show you my ID. Don't move your hands. Okay? Let me know when you want me to give you my ID. Stop being smart. Why is that always the common line when I was young? Maybe I was just too smart. I don't know. But, those are just a couple incidences that we've had here. And then I can remember similar instances happened to my son. And you hear stories of other folks on the north side, some folks on the east side, some folks even on the west side. And it just, you know, for me, I went to school at St. A's, went to school at Hackett, went to Western. So I've always kind of been that minority in the group of friends that I've always had. And why do I get the sense that I'm being treated this way? My friends are not being treated this way. Where is this coming from? And I've struggled with that most of my life. And, again, as I tell these stories, particularly when Philando happened last year, I would tell these stories and suddenly some good friends of mine from high school who I played sports with, who I've partied with, who we've helped out with homework with, would suddenly go, well, you're wrong. This is not happening. Well, how can you tell me it's not happening? It happened to me. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I did, and this is what I didn't do, and this is still what happened to me, and you're going to discount this? Well, you just don't understand how the police are supposed to operate. Okay, so now you're coming down from the mountaintop telling me what's supposed to happen. Let's forget the fact that I have a college degree. I have two college degrees, and I've been a lifetime resident of this town, of this state, and you're telling me I don't know what is supposed to happen. I'm someone who's been in the Capitol and has helped create public policy, and I don't know how they're supposed to act. How dare you discount me? And so the I think the title of the blog basically goes to, you know, I have a lot of contacts. I know a lot of people, but I think that list of people who I consider friends will have to be cut because I don't think you truly are a friend. If you are so easily ignoring what my lived experience is.
And that is how you end this blog post. You say that, again, thanks to those who get me and those who don't, well, it's been fun, but we may have to part ways because I can't do this anymore. And again, as someone who is involved in public policy and politics, I mean, every day you must talk to people who have profound differences with you about how the world should work. And I'm sure you have to form relationships with them, work with them. Is this issue somehow different from the others, that there's a line here that you feel has been crossed, or a line that you feel you can't cross anymore?
Yeah, it really makes me think of that old Langston Hughes poem. You know, watch out when African Americans finally get angry and we rise up. And I paraphrase that, and my mother would probably kill me for it because she loves Langston Hughes. But I can no longer be that minority in your crowd that either A, you can point to and say, see, I know black people, look at Dave. I can't do that anymore, and I can't just be docile. I really have to speak up, and I really have to do what I can to get the story heard. We can disagree on policy. I do that all the time, whether I'm disagreeing with policy with my Republican colleagues, whether I'm disagreeing with policy with Democratic colleagues, with Tea Party colleagues, with Libertarian colleagues, what have you. We can disagree on policy all the time. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But to disagree about, in essence, the value of a human life, the value of a person's lived experience, of someone who is following the law, who's someone who is educated, someone who has been active in this community. I can't do that anymore. And so if someone expects me just to be that poster child for African-American Republicans, don't do that. I can't do that anymore. If I'm just the poster child for the well-spoken African-American, he speaks so nicely. I can't do that anymore. I frankly cannot be polite anymore. I carry myself very well, but I can turn into Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor like that. And if that's what it takes for you to hear my story and that causes us to part ways, then damn it, so be it.
So one more thing I want to read out of your blog post, and this is a little depressing, I guess. We shall overcome someday. That's the song, of course, civil rights anthem. But I don't think I'll be around for that day, and it really makes me very, very sad. If we were having a conversation 5-10 years ago and I had said, will we reach the point of we shall overcome someday, would you have had a different answer?
I think so. I think, and I really think Trevor Noah really kind of expressed it very well. You know, for years we've been asking for body cams, for years we've been asking for video. If we can just get one of these incidents on video, then the system will work. And people of our peers will see what is happening and they will judge accordingly. Philando, we have the video. We have multiple videos. It was there. We finally got a prosecutor to come up with a reasonable charge. Not just manslaughter, but, you know, carelessly discharging or brandishing a weapon in front of a child. And a jury of his peers, and I don't know what the makeup of the jury was, but let's assume it truly was a jury of his peers, said, yeah, there's nothing wrong here. And maybe that's not what the not guilty verdict meant. Maybe it was, well, the prosecutors didn't do a good job, or there's just too much confusion here. But at the end of the day, particularly if the civil trial doesn't come through, this was the perfect storm. You got it on tape. You got the video. You got the audio. It's right there. You still said not guilty. What more is it going to take for there to be justice for not just African Americans, but people in general who are following the law and have had aggressive instances with the police just for following the law? This really breaks my heart. And if my son or if my daughter were to ask me, Dad, is it going to get better? I don't know I could look them in the eye and say, yes, it's going to get better.
Dave Worthams, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
A link to Dave Worthams' blog and the post, I Can't Do This Anymore, can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.